What does it mean to be a good woman? The question haunts us still, decades after Toni Morrison published Sula in 1973. This slender novel, barely 200 pages, quietly revolutionized American literature by daring to center a friendship between two Black women who refuse easy categorization. While Morrison's Beloved won the Pulitzer, Sula cuts deeper in some ways, asking uncomfortable questions about loyalty, morality, and the price of freedom. Oprah called it one of the most moving books I've ever read, yet it remains less discussed than Morrison's other masterworks. Perhaps that's because it refuses to offer comfort. Nell Wright and Sula Peace grow up as inseparable friends in a Black neighborhood called The Bottom, but their bond, intense, complicated, ultimately tragic, defies every conventional narrative about female friendship. One becomes the community's model of respectability, the other its symbol of evil. Yet Morrison forces us to question whether these labels mean anything at all. The Bottom exists because of a lie. A white farmer promised his enslaved worker freedom and bottomland, rich valley soil. Instead, he gave him rocky hills, claiming this was the bottom of heaven. This origin story becomes the DNA of a community, building beauty on terrain nobody else wanted. When a tunnel construction project promises jobs, Black men line up hopefully, only to watch Greeks, Italians, and other white workers hired instead. Jude Green feels this rejection viscerally. More than anything in the world, he wanted to build that tunnel. Denied this dignity, he seeks it through marriage, believing the two of them together would make one Jude, woman as completion rather than companion. Shell-shocked Shadrach returns from World War I haunted by a soldier's exploding head. His response becomes the Bottom's strangest ritual, National Suicide Day. Every January 3rd, beginning in 1920, he marches through town ringing a cowbell, announcing the one day people could kill themselves, making the rest of the year safe. Morrison writes, "It had to do with making a place for fear as a way of controlling it." The novel's climax comes in 1941 when residents join his parade, marching toward the tunnel that refused them jobs. It collapses, killing many. Eva Peace embodies maternal love at its most terrifying. After her husband abandons her with three children and no resources, she disappears for 18 months, returning with one leg missing and enough money to buy a house. Did she place her leg on railroad tracks for insurance money? Eva never confirms the whispered theories, but this ambiguous sacrifice establishes her maternal philosophy, protection through drastic, sometimes violent means. Her most shocking act comes when she douses her drug-addicted son Plum with kerosene and burns him alive. Her chilling explanation? "He was a man, girl, a man. I didn't have that much room." She perceived his addiction as regression to infancy and chose death over watching him diminish. When Hannah asks, "Mama, did you ever love us?" Eva explodes, recounting desperate measures to keep them alive. For Eva, love equals survival, not affection. Yet when Hannah catches fire, Eva throws herself from a second-story window trying to save her. Beneath the hardness lies profound attachment expressed through actions rather than words. Through Eva, Morrison shows how trauma transforms love into something barely recognizable, yet undeniable. Some friendships define us more than any romance. Nell Wright and Sula Peace meet at 12, drawn together by complementary needs. Nell escaping her mother's suffocating respectability, Sula finding structure amid family chaos. Morrison writes, "Their meeting was fortunate, for it let them use each other to grow on. They found in each other's eyes the intimacy they were looking for." When Sula accidentally lets Chicken Little slip into the river, Nell provides calm reassurance. Shh, don't, you didn't mean it. This shared secret creates intimacy built on mutual protection. Their paths diverge sharply. Nell marries Jude at 17, embracing convention, while Sula leaves for 10 years pursuing independence. Their reunion feels like getting the use of an eye back, having a cataract removed. Then Nell discovers Sula and Jude having sex. Decades later, elderly Eva accuses Nell about Chicken Little's death. Walking home afterward, Nell finally understands her grief wasn't about losing Jude, it was about losing Sula. Her cry, "We was girls together," acknowledges the friendship's centrality. Some relationships can't be categorized or replaced. Above Sula's eye sits a stemmed rose. Or is it a tadpole? A snake? Hannah's ashes? The birthmark becomes a Rorschach test, revealing more about observers than Sula herself. After Sula sleeps with Nell's husband, Nell sees the birthmark over her eye was getting darker and looked more and more like a stem and rose, as if betrayal has clarified Sula's essential nature. When Mr. Finley chokes to death upon seeing Sula, the community confirms her birthmark is Hannah's ashes marking her, physical proof of her supposed evil. The birthmark represents fundamental separation from conventional society. Unlike Nell, who blends into community expectations, Sula's face announces her difference, her refusal to marry, have children, or show proper deference. Only Ajax, her lover, sees it as a tadpole, suggesting transformation rather than fixed identity. Through this single feature, Morrison explores how identity is both internally experienced and externally imposed, how the same mark can represent wildness, evil, beauty, or transformation, depending on who's looking and what they need to see. On her deathbed, Sula realizes the real hell of hell is that it is forever. Freedom without consequences is meaningless. Unlike her mother Hannah, whose discreet sexuality the community tolerated, Sula's brazen approach challenges the bottom's social order. She sleeps with men casually, married or not, and most shockingly, crosses the racial boundary by sleeping with white men. The community transforms her into a symbol of evil with unexpected results. Their conviction of Sula's evil changed them in accountable yet mysterious ways. They began to cherish their husbands and wives, protect their children, repair their homes. When Sula dies, this moral energy dissipates. Goodness defined solely against evil lacks sustainable power. Nell embodies the alternative path, community conformity. After Jude leaves, she becomes one of the most thorough Christians in the town, channeling pain into heightened adherence. Yet Eva's accusation shatters Nell's moral superiority, forcing her to confront the good feeling she experienced watching Chicken Little drown. The true distinction between them wasn't goodness versus evil, but self-awareness versus self-deception. Morrison offers no easy answers, only the insistence that we recognize the cost of our choices honestly. Standing in the cemetery, Nell sees the Peace family grave markers as words, not even words, wishes, longings. Her cry, "We was girls together," reveals a suppressed truth. Her deepest grief centered not on her husband's betrayal, but on losing Sula. Morrison describes Nell's cry as having no bottom and it had no top, just circles and circles of sorrow. Memory doesn't progress linearly, but spirals continuously, bringing us back to essential truths we must confront. What remains when we strip away society's definitions? Morrison suggests it's the truth of our connections, messy, complicated, sometimes destructive, but ultimately more defining than any role we perform. Nell spent decades as the wronged wife, the respectable mother, the good Christian woman. Only at the end does she recognize her truest self existed in those childhood moments with Sula, stripping the bark from twigs, tracing letters in the dirt, free from expectations. The greatest betrayal isn't Sula sleeping with Jude or Nell's decades of judgment. It's Nell lying to herself about what she truly lost. Your deepest grief reveals your deepest truth. The question is whether you're brave enough to face it.